Englishman.
I'm much older than you. As a man grows old, he begins to believe in fate. Fate sent you here.
No, SoundCloud sent me here. Hello, and welcome to Cromford's Assortment on Thursday, the 14th of May, 2020. On this day, the 14th of May in 1727, Thomas Gainsborough, the English painter, was born. Apparently, he was noted for being a very fast worker. They say he could prime and undercoat a whole townhouse in less than a day and a half. Citation needed. On this day in 1796, Edward Jenner inoculated a healthy 8-year-old boy with cowpox pus, expecting that the lad would subsequently be immune to smallpox. He later tried his level best to infect the boy with smallpox. Luckily for everybody, not least the long-suffering boy, cowpox did indeed prove to be a magic bullet. On this day in 1832, Felix Mendelssohn's overture, The Hebrides, that's the one that starts like this. Was premiered in London. On this day in 1878, the US Patent Office granted patent number 127568 on a product called Vaseline. Line up with your jokes right here. On this day in 1926, Eric Morecambe was born. I'm sure he made all the right squealy baby noises, but not necessarily in the right order. Couple of birthdays for you. Sean Phillips, the Welsh actress, one-time husband of Peter O'Toole, born on this day in 1933. Singer-songwriter Bobby Darin, born on this day in 1936. On this day in 1938, The Adventures of Robin Hood, the really famous film version that confirmed Errol Flynn as a huge star and has that great fencing duel between Flynn and Basil Rathbone, was released. My favourite lines, "You speak treason fluently." On this day in 1943, Jack Bruce, one-time bassist and harmony singer with Manfred Mann, was born. Oh, yeah. He was also in some other combo, wasn't he? Fromage Frey or something. On this day in 1969, Cate Blanchett, the finest actress of her generation, was born. Oh, yes, she is. If you don't like it, find me and punch me. On this day in 1973, Skylab, the United States' first space station, was launched, ushering in decades of dreary poncing about on the fringes of space, instead of actually going anywhere to explore. They say by 2024 there'll be people on the moon again. About ruddy time too, if it happens. And finally, May the 14th is World Fair Trade Day. Also, National Chicken Dance Day in the US. Personally, I'd do a chicken dance as fair trade for anything you care to name. Now, I'm usually pretty cagey on the subject of how I write songs, probably because if it looks like magic to you, I don't want you to see how the trick works. But In this program, I'm going to bite the bullet and open up about one of my songs. I'm going to try and describe how the music was written and what the obscure lyrics actually mean. And then when you hear the finished demo recording at the end of the program, you'll know as much about the song as I always did.
One moment.
Eh? Oh, it's you again.
How long have you been caretaker here?
Caretaker? I think you must be confused.
Ah!
I'm just presenting a magazine programme here. Cromford's Assortment. Maybe you've heard it.
The devil's in it.
Oh, steady on. Anyway, what do you want?
Have you the keys of the wine cellar?
What do you want that for?
You must have wine. And wine. And more wine.
Thanks, but I'm a hobgoblin man myself.
You didn't drink any of this last bottle, did you?
No. As I said, I'm a hobgoblin man.
Remarkable vintage, that 68.
I don't think you're listening to me.
This is no joke, Englishman.
I think you've been distracting me for long enough.
May I ask your name, sir?
Paul. Paul Cromford. As in Cromford's Assortment.
Joseph!
No, Paul.
Joseph!
Paul! What's the matter with you? They don't even sound similar.
Yes, I suppose you're right.
Now, can I please get back to what I was doing?
We're all right till we get to the cathedral.
I haven't a clue what that means, but here goes anyway. Right. Here's last Monday's version of me starting out to tell you the story of how one of my older songs came into being. Now, the first thing to understand about writing songs is there's no great mystery to it. Really, there isn't. Listen to this. This was recorded during the interval of a Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young concert in 1970, I think it was. This is Graham Nash, just fooling around with the audience. And he's just paddling his hands along the black notes of a piano. But listen to what else he's doing.
Sit yourself down at the piano. Just about in the middle. Put all your fingers on the black notes anywhere you want to. Sing along. Write a song. And understand that you can play.
He was making that song up as he went along. And that's the point. Anybody can write a song. Anybody who can whistle or hum a tune, in tune, can write a song. It's easy. The trick is to write what you think is a good song. And what's a good song? Again, there's no objective yardstick about what makes a good or a bad song. A good song is a song you like because it excites you or stirs a pleasant emotion in you. A bad song is a song you don't like because it annoys you or bores you. And then there are the songs in between that are just forgettable. And if you're listening to a forgettable song, you've got no feelings about one way or the other, then you may as well be doing something else with your time. Don't waste it. So again, yeah, anybody can write songs. And then the ways of writing songs can vary as well. Some people might start with a melody. Some people will start with the words. Some people will start with a set of chords. And then some people will just chop and change as the mood takes them. And I've tried a bit of each. But probably about 80% of the songs I've written start with chords. And the song I'm going to illustrate today took shape more years ago than I care to remember. And it took shape when I sat down one day with a guitar to see what would happen. Now that is an A minor in the first position on the guitar. And for this particular song, I started with that. 1, 2, 3, 4. And sometimes when I'm playing around with chord sequences on the guitar, I start to see shapes that the chords are taking rather than the mechanics of the music or anything like that. So for me, for example, it's a bit like those plastic tile puzzles you might have seen when you were a kid. You have to tessellate little shapes into one big square. And for me, that A minor. 2, 3, 4. Is a bit like a little square that has to go into the big one. And if they are the only shapes that you're going to be working with, then it's going to be easy to fill up the square and easy to solve the puzzle. But if that's all you're going to be working with, then probably you're going to be writing a fairly boring and forgettable song, if not annoying. So you need to vary it. So while I was fiddling around with that, I brought in a second shape, and that's the D major. So 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Kind of My Sweet Lord. So now we've got something that goes somewhere and then comes back, but not with much of a sense of direction, you know? It's a bit like a sparrow hopping between two telegraph wires and not really going anywhere. But then, listen to what happens when, instead of the second half of that A minor, I bring in the relative major of that, which is the C major, and play this. See, already you can hear that it's not just going somewhere, but there's a sense of direction, there's a sense of forward movement. It wants to go somewhere else. And I could repeat that sequence a few times, but it wants to go somewhere else. And so at the time, I decided that I would drop my fingers down a set of strings on the guitar and do the same trick with the starting with the E minor. So if I go from that second sequence back to the first sequence exactly as I played them before, you'll notice an interesting thing that happens on the A chord. Listen. So it went from A major to A minor, sort of happy to sad, if you like. So that's what I had so far in the song at that point. I had the first sequence, 2, 3, 4, and again, 1, 2, 3, 4, to the second one. So I quickly decided that the first half of that, the first pattern, would be the first half of the verse, and the second pattern would be the second half of the verse. And I started to see them like sort of lopsided L shapes that I thought would be an interesting challenge for tessellating into the square puzzle, if you like. And to solve the whole thing, I brought in a third sequence using the same pattern, but starting on the D minor. I figured that this would be the chorus. And then I brought myself back to the initial sequence with a passing chord using the E major. So, with, I don't know, about half an hour's worth of noodling around on the guitar, I found I'd got a chord sequence that would support a whole song. But then I started to fiddle around with interesting ways of playing those chords, just to make it a bit more stimulating for me, because, you know, when you play guitar, these shapes, they're all first position shapes of the chords, and they all start to sound really boring after a while. So I started to figure out different fingerings, leaving some of the strings open, like this. And so on, like that. So now I had the basis for the song, then I had to think about the words and the melody, and at this stage I had no idea what the theme of the song was going to be. So I came back to it a little bit later, and so will we.
You see, Rudolph is my king. I have a feeling about my king, about the crown. I feel about it much as any other man would feel about his children, or the woman he loved. He'd hate to leave her to her fate without putting up a fight. Can you?
Now, who do you suppose that is? The bloke who keeps putting his oar in. Well, he's a man named Smith. Charles Smith. Probably always called Charles. Never Charlie, or Chaz, or Chuck. Not twice, anyway. Charles A. Smith was a formidable fellow, born in London in the mid-19th century. At 25, he was prospecting for gold in South Africa, and by the age of 30, he was playing cricket for Sussex, sharing pitches with the likes of W.G. Grace himself. Then, in the 1890s, he turned his hand to stage acting and progressed to film acting in the 1920s. And let's leave him there for now. In the meantime, here is an abbreviated version of an instrumental track for the song I'm demonstrating for you. It's not bad, but the lead guitar riffs would overshadow any vocal, so it's just as well there isn't one. Now, back to our cricket-playing actor, Mr. Smith. By 1932, he was in Hollywood, and he wasn't going by the name Charles A. Smith. Can you guess? Well, he collapsed his first name, expanded his middle name, and was known and beloved around the world as C. Aubrey Smith. Never heard of him? He was a phenomenally busy actor, but hardly ever a leading man. He specialised in playing crusty old buffers with hearts of gold, and he had a face to fit the parts. Picture one of those Easter Island statues with a whacking great moustache like a bow wave stuck on the front, and you've just about got it. A C. Aubrey Smith film character tended to be very strong on nobility, fair play, and keeping a straight bat. All the clips of him in this programme are from his most famous film, The Prisoner of Zenda, in 1937. Here he is again, being quintessentially himself, and getting smacked by Ronald Coleman.
It's my duty to remind you once more of tomorrow.
What, again?
Again.
Well, so be it. You've reminded me. Now sit down and have a drink.
You have a duty, sir.
Duty, duty. On my last night of freedom.
I question your freedom, sir, to drink yourself into a condition in which you will not be fit to be crowned tomorrow.
I question your right to say that to me.
I served your father during his life, sir.
I question your right to bring my father into this.
Your father knew his obligations to the crown.
And I don't. Is that what you mean?
He never thought of himself or of his own pleasure. He never forgot that he was king.
I'll bet that didn't tickle.
By your leave, Your Majesty.
It's time for On the Trot, where I suggest something for you to stick in your ears to go for your daily walk or your daily jog. And this week we're going back 49 years for something that you can't really jog to, but it's really good for stamping out in your wellies. So dig those wellies out, get out there and get stamping to Slade, 'cause I love you.
Thank you.
Some time ago, quite a long time ago, I used to work with a woman who came from outside the EU, and she'd married a local bloke in the furtherance of getting a green card or naturalisation or whatever. And we used to have quite a lot of conversations, and sometimes she would trot out a little bit of a rhyme that they used to be taught when she was learning English where she came from. And it was a really daft little thing about a big red bus going to London town. For some reason, the phrase stuck in my head at the time. Years went by, and in due course I revived the music career that I'd put on ice for several years. And then around the time I was putting the music together for the demonstration song that I've been showing you in this programme, I started to think about what the lyric might be. For some reason, this phrase about a big red bus going to London town popped into my head. And it became the first line of the finished song. Here comes the big red bus to take you to London town. And thinking about that put me in mind of the situation of the woman that I used to know. And I found myself picturing a hypothetical situation. So, say, if I were in love with a woman who was not of these shores and whose legal status was dodgy, to what lengths would I go to make life easier for her? So that was my starting point, and the rest of the lyrics started to take shape as a result of that. So in the song, I am an alternative version of me, and you are the woman with the dodgy legal status of foreign extraction. Here comes the big red bus to take you to London town. Then the lyrics go, you're just a phone call away from your biggest bring down. In other words, be careful who you're talking to and what you say about your situation, because you don't know who's listening, you don't know who's taking notes. Then the next line is, if you could speak, there'd be no cats left in anyone's bag. In other words, again, watch what you're saying, watch who you're saying it to. And then the next line, if you could travel, there'd be nowhere clear of your flag. In other words, yes, I know you want to see the world, you want to live your life, but at the moment you're in a very difficult situation legally and you'd better not try and leave the country. And the next line is, here comes a big red heart to keep you from going wrong. Well, that's me, Mr. Protective. And then the next line, you're just a careless talk away from singing your swan song. Back on that other theme again. Be careful who you're talking to and what you're saying. The next line, if you would run, there'd be no need and every need. I have to confess, at the moment, I haven't the faintest idea what that means. I must have had some vague idea of what I meant when I wrote that line, but beyond it sounding a bit poetic, I haven't the faintest idea right now. Sorry. Then, if you would follow, I don't know if I'm willing to lead, is the next line. In other words, don't bank on me, I might not be able to give you what you want. And then jumping to the third verse, the first line is, here come the double dealers taking you out of your mind. So maybe officialdom has caught up with you and they're going to start trying to lay traps for you with documents and get you to confess to stuff. The next line, you're just a pleasantry away from having the forms signed, which follows on from what I was just saying. The next line, if I were you, I'd find a different face for the climb. So, again, don't bank on me. I might not be able to give you what you want. Next line, if you were me, you'd do the same thing every time. Which basically is a reference to human nature, isn't it? We can't change our basic natures. I'll do what I can, and I always would do what I can. I needed a chorus. I needed the chorus lyric. And it dawned on me that the chorus is where I have to make my declaration of where I'm coming from. And basically, you might not be able to bank on me because I couldn't necessarily give you what you need. But I would always play fair and straight with you. So in the chorus, I'm putting myself across as a paragon of honesty, integrity, fair play, always keeping a straight bat. And suddenly there they were in my head. Two ancient cricketers, C. Aubrey Smith and W.G. Grace. So that's where the chorus came from. 'Cause I'm a fair man for England, just like C. Aubrey Smith in W.G. Graceland. And there the song was complete. Almost. I had a set of lyrics, I had the chord changes, I had a pretty good idea of how I was going to pass the words against the chords, but I still didn't have a vocal tune. So the next thing to do was to just start scat singing those words against the chords that I played until the melody started to suggest itself, which they always do. And you will hear the finished demo recording version of the song very shortly. So shortly, in fact, that here it is.
Here comes the big red bus to take you to London town. You're just a phone call away from your biggest breakdown. If you could speak, there'd be no cats left in anyone's bag. If you could travel, there'd be nowhere clear of your flag. A big red horse to keep you from going wrong. You're just a careless talk away from singing your swan song. If you could run, there'd be no need and every need. Taking you out of your mind. You're just a pleasantry away from having the form signed. If I were you, I'd find a different face for the climb. Red bus to take you to London town. Here comes the big red bus to take you. to take you, to take you, to take.
And that's about all I've got for you this week.
Goodbye, Englishman. You're the finest Elfberg of them all.
Yeah, bye. What did he call me? An elf bag? Sounded like an elf bag. That doesn't even make any sense. So that was the programme. I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please make a date for the next one on Thursday, the 21st of May. In the meantime, keep a grip on yourself. Be patient. Stay sane, safe and well. I made this programme for you, and I'm going to be here sending them out as long as you're there to receive them. And we are going to get through this. Bye for now. Cromford's assortment was conceived, assembled and presented by me, Paul Cromford. I don't own the songs Black Notes and 'Cause I Love You or C. Aubrey Smith's filmed legacy. I just borrowed them to entertain you. I do own the song C. Aubrey Smith, and all other pieces of music throughout the programme are mine. Fingers. This was a Paul Cromford production for you. Nobody but you.